Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. I'm Keith Caulfield, Senior Director of Charts at Billboard.
And I'm Katie Atkinson, Billboard's Deputy Editor Digital.
Hello, Katie.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. How about yourself?
I'm okay and hoping we don't get kicked out of this room.
Well, don't let that affect this wonderful podcast. We've got this room for only 10 more minutes, but we need more.
We need more.
So let's see how this works out.
Could be the shortest podcast ever from the Pop Shop. Well, as always, the Billboard Pop Shop podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop.
Today on the show, we've got big chart news to discuss about the Jonas Brothers and Drake. Plus, we'll be chatting about Taylor Swift's new song, You Need to Calm Down, and its star-studded music video. Plus, our initial reactions to Madonna's new album, Madam X.
We couldn't get through an episode.
We're talking about Madonna.
Shut up. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast provider. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts. Okie dokie. Let's talk about some charts. I hear that we have some.
I think we do, Keith. I feel like that's your job.
It's all about... It sure is. It's all about happiness on the Billboard 200 albums chart as the Jonas Brothers' new album, Happiness Begins at number one.
Oh, man.
With the biggest week of the year. The set starts with 414,000 equivalent album units earned in the week ending June 13th, according to Nielsen Music. And of that sum, 357,000 were in album sales. Both sums actually represent the largest weeks of the year for any album, of course, both in units and in sales. And the album is the Pop Trio's first studio album since 2009, when they released Lines, Vines, and Trying Times, which also debuted at number one. They had some albums in between there, like a Jonas LA soundtrack, and like a live album, but this is like their first proper studio album.
I feel like we assumed or thought that they probably would debut at number one, but
right.
Was it surprising how big the debut was? I mean, being like the biggest week of the year and the biggest pop album since... Oh, I'm jumping ahead, but I'm not sure if you say biggest pop album since Taylor Swift's Reputation.
Well, that is correct. It has the biggest week for a pop album since Taylor Swift's Reputation.
I read your article.
You did. You might even be reading the script as well. Let's back up just a skosh.
Okay.
So the album Happiness Begins also has the largest week for any album since last October, when Lil Wayne's The Carter 5 started with 480,000 units, and that was on the October 13th chart. Happiness's sales week is the biggest for any album since Taylor Swift's Reputation started with 1.22 million copies sold back in December of 2017. Now, it's also the biggest week for a pop album since Taylor Swift's Reputation.
Right, we're talking about units, not just sales alone.
Right, so, so overall, it's the biggest for a pop album since Taylor Swift's. And when we say pop, we mean something that is not hip-hop.
I was going to say not falling into one of our other genre charts, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty simple.
Yeah.
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 And I think, we knew that it was going to be big. We didn't have a forecast story about this last week on Billboard.com, but I mean, we have been hearing, at least I've been hearing sort of from folks, forecasters, prognosticators, that it was going to be big. I think we were hearing like below 400, but like above 350. But then the Jonas Brothers had a ticket bundle in play for their arena tour. And there's like more than 60 dates that they had the bundle attached to. And so when you have like 60 dates and they're all playing between like 18,000 people, that's a whole lot of sales that you could possibly... That's a whole lot of bundles. It's a whole lot of sales that you can generate from that offer.
Yeah.
So much in the same way where, you know, we've talked in previous shows about, you know, really robust sales figures that have been assisted by these bundles, say you know, Pink's Beautiful Trauma album, or Kenny Chesney's Live in No Shoes Nation, or Backstreet Boys earlier this year with DNA. You know, that really helps. So, yeah, but still, big week.
Big.
Big week. It was also the most streamed album of the week. You know, sometimes some album will be number one on the Billboard 200, but may not necessarily be the most streamed album. But it was also the album that had the most streams generated.
Joe Bros are back. They're back.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard about it, but they had like a number one hit on the Hot 100.
They also had that. Their first number one ever.
So this isn't just like some weird random fluke.
No.
Like this was setting up to be a big deal in the first place.
Absolutely.
Meanwhile, over on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. Oh, wait, before I move on.
I thought you skipped a part there.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you want even more Joe Bro facts, go read my story on billboard.com. And in that same story, you will find other information about the other four debuts that happened in the top 10 on the Billboard 200 this week. Santana, Luke Combs, Future, and Polo G all debut in the top 10. So big week for new albums.
A lot of action.
A lot of chart action, as some say. There's my chart radio voice. Oh, yeah. Or the Kool-Aid Man. Okay, so moving on to the Billboard Hot 100 chart. Guess who? Lil Nas X. He's still number one for an 11th week with Old Town Road featuring Billy Ray Cyrus. How long will this be number one?
Well, I don't know. You can vote in a poll over on billboard.com if you'd like to.
Did you? Is that
we did that last week. And
it's still there.
It stays open, yeah. And our options are between 10, which was last week, and obviously now it got to 11.
Right.
So don't vote for 10 if you go to that poll.
Yeah, you're going to get it wrong.
Vote for 11 or up. And then the options go up to 16 or 17 plus, I should say, because the record is 16. So
One Sweet Day by Boyz II Men and Mariah Carey and Despacito.
By Luis Fonsi, Daddy Yankee, and Justin Bieber.
Yeah, it kind of feels... Well, we'll get to something in just a second that maybe has a shot at being number one.
Yes, we will.
Yeah, but seems like right now it ain't going nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, number one, we've got that settled. But let's talk about how there's a debut in the top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100. Chris Brown's No Guidance featuring Drake debuts straight in at number 9. The song, I think, was released on June 7th. So I think it was released on the first day of the sales and streaming tracking week. It also begins at number 4 on our streaming songs chart and at number 9 on our digital song sales chart. It's the 15th top 10 for Chris Brown on the Hot 100. And, wait for it, the 34th top 10 for Drake. And that ties him with the Beatles. Yes, the Beatles. For the second most top 10s ever on the Hot 100 chart. Fun fact, Katie?
Yes.
I wasn't like, Katie, listen to
yes.
me.
Yes.
The Beatles accumulated their first 32 top 10s between 1964 and 1970. So basically like 6 years.
Yeah.
Right? 65, 66, 67, 68, 69, 70. Like 6 years. And then they basically broke up.
Yeah.
And then...
Not basically.
Yeah, they did. Okay. Then they added one more top 10 in 1976. I think it was a reissue, or maybe it was the first time the single came out, Forgot to Get You Into My Life. I think that's when it came out. And I think it was tied to something. I don't remember what the exact thing was. I don't have it in my notes. And then they got another top 10, their final so far top 10, in 1996. With Free as a Bird. Free as a Bird from the first anthology album. It was the first new song from the Beatles in forever.
Yeah.
And it was famously the one where they took an old John Lennon cassette tape that he had in their archive somewhere and put new instrumentation and vocals from the rest of the band.
The Living Beatles.
Living Beatles.
At the time.
So now, as for Drake, he got his first top 10 hit in 2009. So... 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And last year alone, Drake got 13 top 10s.
Wow.
A lot of them were from his Scorpion album.
Yeah.
And three of those were number ones. God's Plan, Nice for What, and In My Feelings. So, you know, the Beatles got more at a quicker pace. Drake, though, probably got like
more,
I mean,
more in like a concentrated amount of time within that decade.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, people are very quick to say, oh, it's very hard to compare the 1960s versus now when we have streaming and you don't need like a official single anymore. And
it's also
all that jazz.
Also Drake has been a featured artist on a lot of songs, and that was not typical in the 60s as well. Like the Beatles weren't jumping on a Rolling Stones song or whatever.
Right, and you know, I bet it had. You know, I mean, if we could go back in time and say, oh, if like streaming and digital downloads and you could just buy any song you wanted existed in the 1960s, mm-hmm. I think we'd probably be on like, you know, hundreds of top tens for the
yes.
Beatles.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think that's the same thing if you looked at Michael Jackson or Madonna or Barbara or Janet or, you know, name whoever it was, Whitney in the 80s, they would probably have dozens more top tens, top 40 hits.
As you said earlier today, it's not like when the box office is adjusted for inflation. It's yeah. like there's so many more factors that you literally can't figure out.
Yeah.
You know, you can't compare apples to oranges, as they say.
Yeah, I mean, the it's just the chart works so differently now, and you know.
So a lot of these records are going to disappear for the like legacy artists, and that's just how it's got to be. Sorry, the Beatles, and sorry, Madonna, Drake has in her sights, or in his sights.
Yeah, so as Katie says, the record for the most top tens on the Hot 100, as astute followers of me and Katie should know, if you've watched my interview with Madonna backstage at the Billboard Music Awards, where I quoted this statistic to her, Madonna has the most top tens on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. She is the only person or act ahead of the Beatles and Drake. She has 38 top tens. It seems like, and I mean, I kind of figured this like when Rihanna and Drake were racking up so many top tens like a couple years ago, I'm like, all right, Madonna's record's going to fall. It's just a matter of time. I mean, and records were meant to be broken. And it feels like, Katie, Drake could do it sooner than we thought.
Yeah. Basically, the next time he releases an album.
Or he could do it, like, in the next few weeks, for all we know.
Oh, my goodness.
Because? Why?
Well, he has a couple new songs, because...
You don't say. Because, evidently, he's on a basketball team.
Basically. And here's me hunting and searching for the chunk that I wrote about Drake, and it's not there.
I know, I was... Wait, this is so funny. I looked to Katie. I'm like, Katie, here's your part about Drake. And I'm like, wait, I didn't put it into the script.
Don't worry, but I'm prepared. I have it right here in front of me.
This is why Katie seemed like she wasn't...
I'm like, what are you prompting me for
right now?
What are
you right prompting for? The next thing on our list is something else. Oh, dear.
Well, as Keith said, in addition to No Guidance a week ago, there is more Drake music that fans can enjoy. With the Toronto Raptors taking home their first NBA championship last week, Drake delivered on his promise of new music in the wake of the win, delivering the two-song Best in the World pack early Saturday morning.
Don't call it a single.
Don't call it an EP.
Because
it's
not.
Two songs.
It's just two songs. It's a two-song pack.
The two songs were Omerta. I might be saying that wrong. It's got a backward accent on the A. Omerta? Sure. And the Rick Ross-assisted Money in the Grave. And it seems like Omerta is garnering the most conversation because he seemingly pokes, you know, new jabs at Pusha T in their long-running feud.
Oh.
Saying a line like, you know, he told on me, talking about, like, telling the world that Drake had a son.
Oh.
That he wasn't public about.
Right, that.
That, so...
And it feels like, and that seems like the song that's a little bit newer sounding.
Right. I would say that's true.
Because the other one, there's lyrics in it that seem like it was probably maybe recorded a little bit ago.
It's funny, too, because when he took kind of the full day, the Raptors won the NBA championship on Thursday last week. And so when he didn't immediately drop music, I'm thinking like, oh, is he going to be putting in lyrics about like, play-by-play from the game,
right.
Like Kawhi Leonard being MVP?
He's going to get
some
of the Raptors as a guest star on the track?
Exactly. Any number of things that he could have done. Like, and instead, he put out these two songs that are just like Drake songs. They kind of have nothing to do with the team. So, yeah. Anyway, but he gave them his gifts,
sort
two new songs.
The least amount of work possible.
Exactly. So we'll see where those end up on the charts next week.
As Drake slaps us virtually through the interwebs.
Here's a couple more songs,
guys.
Here's
just more songs. I've just got them all sitting around. Just doesn't matter what I put out there. It's just going to be a hit. So those songs, I mean, could one of those songs possibly contend for number one next week and knock out Lil Nas X?
Or maybe Taylor Swift's new song.
Hey, speaking of Taylor Swift, she has a new song.
Yeah, she put out a brand new song called You Need to Calm Down last Friday. And then she released a crazy star-studded music video on Monday via Good Morning America. Keith and I have both watched this video. It dropped on Monday morning. Swift co-directed the video, and it features a delightful cameo from Katy Perry, as well as Ellen DeGeneres, the cast of Queer Eye, RuPaul, Hayley Kiyoko, Ryan Reynolds, Sierra,
I didn't even
Adam
see
Lambert.
Sierra.
Oh, yeah, she officiated the wedding between...
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even see Adam Lambert.
You didn't? He was giving the tattoo to Ellen DeGeneres.
Oh, I just focused on Ellen.
Oh, that's so funny. Jeez. Adam was the tattoo artist.
It's one of those videos where you have to watch it clearly repeatedly.
And if you need help, Billboard.com has a gallery of every cameo.
Person?
Yes, broken down.
I mean, there could be like random people that are in the background that are somewhat important.
Yeah, we might have missed people. I hope we didn't. We were pretty complete.
I cut you
it.
Off. You were going to continue. There's
well,
more people.
Well, okay. Let's see. I stopped at Adam Lambert. Dexter Mayfield, Laverne Cox, Chester Lockhart, Todrick Hall, Adam Rippon, Billy Porter, Jesse Tyler Ferguson, and more.
There's some of those people I actually don't recognize their names.
Oh, well, there's like some YouTube stars and
Dexter Mayfield and Chester Lockhart.
Dexter Mayfield is the big dancer guy.
Uh-huh.
And then Chester Lockhart was a guy, he's like blonde. I'm not sure what he's
famous for. I mean, oh, okay. They're...
Dexter is a dancer.
Okay.
Chester Lockhart. Sorry, Chester.
It's okay. We're discovering some. It's okay. We're discovering people from this video that Taylor made. It's okay.
He's an actor and a recording artist.
All right then.
Okay, so a lot goes down in this video. I started trying to like write out everything that happens, but like let me just give you some quick hits here.
Okay.
There's Taylor having a tea party with the Queer Eye guys, all five. Hayley Kiyoko shooting a bow and arrow. She shoots an arrow into the number 5, which seems to have some significance to the album.
With the opening scenes of the video, they're shot from overhead on place settings, or what it looks like place settings, of like a tea set and some cups, and there's 5 items in
so
it.
So people are guessing that the 5th song on the album is going to be significant. Apparently, and I didn't realize this, I feel like... such a like a waste of a Taylor fan reading all these in-depth theories because people are like going all in. But apparently she's known for her 5th song in her albums being like a very emotional song.
Oh.
And from her previous releases. So they think that that's going to be like this key song on the album. And that's why she's pointing to the number 5. But we don't know. It could be something else altogether.
She had 5. Didn't she have like 5 fence posts?
She posted a tweet last week about there being 5 posts in the fence.
Oh, man.
It's a lot to be a Taylor fan right now.
Yeah, but it's probably also super fun to be a big crazy Taylor fan.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She's leaving lots of hints everywhere she goes. Mm. So then we have Adam Rippon, the Olympic ice skater, selling snow cones.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Jesse Tyler Ferguson marrying his real life husband, Justin Makita, with Sierra officiating.
Thanks for the clarification.
Then there is a host of RuPaul's Drag Race alums dressed as pop stars, including, let me give the full list, and Keith knows Drag Race. I was going to say better than I do, but I don't know it at all. So, like, that's not even
so it's,
correct.
There's Trinity the Tuck as Lady Gaga.
Yes.
Delta Work as Adele. And Delta has done Adele in front of Adele, like at an Adele concert.
That's incredible.
Which is hilarious. Akira C. Davenport as Nicki Minaj. Adore Delano as Katy Perry. Tatiana is Ariana Grande. Trinity K. Bonet is Cardi B. And J. Jolie, Jesse. Did J. Jolie get a last name?
According to our gallery.
Oh, okay. I always just knew of J. Jolie as J. Jolie, as Taylor Swift and herself. And when you watch the video and it cuts to this scene, it's this line of, you know, ladies.
Yeah.
And you don't know what's going on. And then,
you think it's Taylor.
And I was like, oh, Taylor. I'm like, Taylor, you look different. And I'm like, wait. I'm like, oh my God, it's J. Jolie. But she looks...
she's wearing one of Taylor's iconic, like, sequined rompers.
Yeah, and it's one of those iridescent sequin things that's very like, oh, that's a Taylor
Taylor's
outfit.
Literally worn that before.
And I'm like, but you look different.
She's got the bangs. She's got the ponytail.
And I'm like, oh, this is like cute. And then RuPaul shows up with a crown, you know.
Throws the crown in the air.
So, like, she doesn't have to, like, crown in any single one
of
them.
Because they all have crowns. Because they're all queens, guys.
Get it? Get it?
Okay, then the final scene, which is, of course, what got a lot of headlines, sees Katy Perry showing up in her Met Gala hamburger costume, locking eyes with Taylor in a French fry costume across a room during a food fight between the drag queens, and then the hamburger and the French fries embrace and end their years-long beef. quote unquote.
And become a happy meal.
And become a happy meal.
That's Taylor. That's Taylor's own caption on Tumblr. She said, a happy meal.
Oh, so like I said, I'm breathless from listening to that. And that's not even everything. Like I didn't, Ryan Reynolds is in the video. I didn't say that.
Yeah.
There's Hannah Hart, I think, is a YouTube star. She's an actress, YouTube star.
She's weightlifting a boombox.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, of course, Todrick. He executive produced the video with Taylor, and he dances and walks throughout the video with Taylor. Todrick's who's like with her, like arm in arm.
Oh, I got confused because I think that Dexter person was dancing next to her, and I'm like, that's not Todrick.
No.
Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah, that's Dexter. That's what I just learned.
Right. But when you, I need to. Okay.
Did I get all the big ones?
It's a video that requires repeat watching, which yes. is clearly why it was designed. It's interesting that she chose this video to combine the message of, I mean, the very overt message, because the song is overtly. If you thought the song was just sort of acknowledging. LGBTQ,
like just slipping Glad in there,
right? If you thought like, oh, it's just sort of like a hat tip, and it can be kind of like seen as both ways, you know, it's like a sort of a universal message. Then you watch the video, you're like, oh no, she's all in on this. I mean, her hair at one point is like three different colors. That is possibly,
people were saying it's the colors of the bisexual pride flag, okay. which I was not familiar with until I read an article breaking down all the various hints.
Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, I looked up the bi flag, uh-huh. yes, after that, and it is true.
So Taylor's hair colors at one point. So then after all this, Katy Perry shows up, which is not really relating to any of the LGBTQ.
It's more along the lines of the like Twitter trolling hate right, aspect
it's like, let's,
of it.
Right. It's about, you know, just calm down, like stop screaming at people. Just,
and she's probably speaking to herself as well. You need to calm down. Like, you probably shouldn't have gotten so upset about the dancer drama, you know, 6 years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like it's a, here's something I'm surprised about. I feel like there's like too many directions we could go down talking about this song and this video. But one thing I am surprised about is when it was originally mentioned that Katy might be in the video, I thought, no, that's not how Taylor and Katy are going to do this like resolution. I feel like they'll do like a song together. That's like a joint song, because the idea of Katy just popping up in a Taylor video, it doesn't feel like it's on like even like an even playing field or something.
Yeah, it felt like, is this really the correct venue?
I would have liked to have seen them like perform together at like a live event for the first time.
Who knows? That could still happen.
I mean, the VMAs are on the horizon
but, I mean,
in August.
Also, Taylor's been down that road before when her and Nicki Minaj, you know,
she's done it that way.
She's like, look, well, we'll do it this way.
It's just an interesting way to do it. After, I mean, this is like a really long simmering. Like bad
beef.
Blood.
I mean, for God's sakes, you made a song about it.
Yeah.
And then
exactly.
Katy made Swish Swish about it.
Yeah.
And like everything.
So it should have been resolved in song, is what I'm saying. It started in song, it should end in song.
If only this could have happened before the Billboard Awards.
Ah, exactly.
Yeah.
I do want to go down one other avenue. Can I just ask you, like, you know, I feel like I've read, I was going to say shit ton. I've read a shit ton on Twitter, just like people arguing over like whether it's a good look for her as an ally to be doing this. Like, is Pride Month about Taylor Swift?
I feel like her heart is in the right place.
Right.
But I see how this could be interpreted as being possibly opportunistic.
Yes.
So you have to be very careful about that, though. And I think the whole Pride Month is a month where people's motives are questioned.
Yeah.
But it's hard to question the sort of the purity of the kind of, you know, motivation behind it with Taylor, because she has been outspoken in the past. I think that's going to happen.
The net good is probably like outweighs any like sort of worry about what the motivation came from. You know what I mean? Like, there's like an uptick in GLAAD donations, and there are Taylor Swift fans around the world.
I mean, Taylor Swift
might need this message.
Taylor Swift has been BFFs with Ellen DeGeneres for a very long time. She's been on the show so many times. She's had a long history with Todrick Hall.
Yes, the people in the video are not like weird. She's like been friends with Ciara for a while. Like, there's I agree with that.
So I think as a whole, you know, if you add it all together, it's. Yes, it makes total sense.
Yeah.
But I think there could be some folks that could be very quick to be like, oh, really?
Yeah.
Like, but
maybe
I mean, she's like, look.
Calm down.
Yeah, exactly. She's like, you need to calm down.
Get off my gown.
She's like, it's Pride Month. Why can't we celebrate? Like, come on, guys.
Oh. Okay. I mean, should we talk about Madonna?
Sure.
Okay, so Madonna's 14th studio album, Madam X, has officially arrived.
You don't say.
Yes, it's here. I mean, we have been talking about this for a while. When did Medellin come out?
Medellin?
I know I don't Medellin? Say it right. I say it the American English way.
Say, it was a April.
Yeah, so it's been a few months that we've been chatting, and here it is. It's arrived. The 13-track project includes collaborations with, as we mentioned, Medellin with Maluma, and Quavo and Swae Lee and Anita, and it spans genres and styles from trap to reggaeton to dance and beyond, which makes sense given the many personas that Madonna teased in the lead up to the Madam X release. Madam X is everyone. She's everything.
She's every woman. It's all in her.
So Keith, you've been awaiting this album. Like, now you've gotten to appreciate it as a whole project. Like, let's talk about it. What are you thinking?
So many thoughts.
There's a lot of roads we can go down here too.
It's interesting. We don't normally get into like discussions about sort of like full albums on this show necessarily, but because this is Madonna.
Yes.
And because, you know, I like her, then of course I'm going to have some thoughts. I'm not going to try to fall into a rabbit hole here. So we'll have to dial me back in just a moment.
Okay.
I feel it's okay. So full disclosure, I actually heard some tracks from the album a while ago, but I could
under
not
lock and key.
Yeah, I could not say anything. I didn't have the album. I had to go listen to it somewhere, but I didn't hear the whole thing. And I remember my initial impression was, and I heard that was when I heard Medellin for the first time, and I was kind of like, that's interesting. And that was actually my initial reaction to a lot of the songs.
Yeah.
There were some songs where I'm like, this is really cool, but it's still kind of weird. I'm like, well, that's what I want from Madonna.
Yeah.
I want cool, but also weird, because you want her to kind of be trying to think outside the box
and
a little bit.
Move pop music forward.
Right. So I heard those songs, not that many, but enough to kind of form an opinion of, this is going to be kind of a weird, eclectic, possibly super interesting album.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't hear anything except the five songs she released leading up to the album: Medellin, Crave, I Rise, Dark Ballet, and then the other one, which I forget. Oh, Future with Quavo.
Yeah.
And that kind of gives you sort of this cross section of tracks, but still, you need to listen to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because there are certain songs over the weekend that was playing on repeat.
Yeah.
That I'm like, all right, these are the ones I really, really like, but it's just because those were the easiest ones for me to digest really quick, because I also really like Madonna's dance songs. So as some on social media have said, Madonna's, you know, giving the gays what they want, because there are some dancey songs on here, but even the dancey songs are like unconventional and kind of weird. You know, she has a song called God Control, which starts off as this weird sort of like chanting, like, you know, song about ostensibly gun control. Then it turns into like a disco banger. And then there's another song called I Don't Search, I Find, which is hilarious if you try to ask your home speaker to play it for you, because it's just like, what are you trying to find? I'm like, which is, it's another up-tempo dance song, and it reminded me of songs from her music album and from her Ray of Light album, where she would take kind of lyrics that were cryptic and kind of let you do the thinking of where she's going with the track. As a whole, I've already found like a clutch of tracks that I am repeating.
Yeah.
At least half of the album I'm really into, and then the other half is like sort of like weird, different, eclectic, interesting. So
I'm, it's a good, like, the only way I've consumed it now is one all the way through listen.
Uh-huh.
And it is a good, just one crazy listen.
Yeah, it's all over the place, but I still feel like it's very thoroughly Madonna,
yeah,
all the way
totally.
Through. Yeah.
But I feel like you could play it at a dinner party and people wouldn't think it got stale. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
it's one artist's album. Typically, you wouldn't just like let it play.
You were saying earlier, one of our coworkers was playing it next door,
mm-hmm.
and at one point, you did what?
I didn't know who it was,
right.
and was like, what the hell are we listening to?
And you're like, Madonna.
And then it transitioned, I think, into a song I recognized or heard her voice or something. And I was like, oh, this is the new Madonna album. I get it. Like, I literally started listening to it not knowing what I was listening to.
Yeah. So anyways, lots of thoughts on Madonna. There's sort of the short version.
Do you think that there's a chance that Madame X could be number one on your Billboard 200 next week?
There's always a chance.
Yes.
I have no information at this point.
Right.
But,
what else came out? Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce Springsteen is the big thing that came out.
Always does well on albums.
Yeah. So, and you know, who knows? I mean, there could always be an album that drops between now and Thursday.
Yeah, who
knows?
That could sort of... I mean, Drake's just out there looming with his two-song packs.
All right, so let's move on. It's time for the chart stat of the week. Okay, so 25 years ago this week, a former opening act for Madonna, the Beastie Boys,
yes,
debuted at number one on the Billboard 200 albums chart with Ill Communication.
Did you see that tour?
The Virgin Tour?
Yeah, with the Beastie Boys?
No.
I didn't think so.
No, I was probably a little bit young to go to a tour. Finally, I found something where I was too young to do it. Ill Communication bowed atop the Billboard 200 dated June 18th, 2004, and spent... No, 1994. Sorry, not 2004.
Yes.
1994. And spent 1 week at number one. It was the rap trio's first number one since 1987's License to Ill. And that spent 7 weeks at number one. After Ill Communication, Beastie Boys would notch two more number ones. Hello Nasty in 1998 and To the Five Boroughs in 2004. Ill Communication launched familiar favorite tracks like Root Down, Sure Shot, and Get It Together, but it's probably best remembered for the hit single Sabotage and its music video.
Did you hear the story behind Sabotage that the guys just told in their like new book?
Maybe.
They revealed that the song was written about their sound engineer at the time, because he was always trying to like get the F out of the studio and was like, yeah, this sounds good, we're fine, it's done. And they were always trying to get like the best take, the best everything. And so they like accused him of basically sabotaging their music.
Oh.
And so they wrote the song, but like didn't tell him that that's what it was about. Like they wrote the song as like a subtle, like, you know, cryptic dig at their sound engineer.
Wow.
Yeah.
I did see a clip where they were talking about how they just sort of came up with a da-dun,
oh.
like the guitar riff, and they were just like jamming, and that's how the song came about. It just sort of came from a jam session.
I heard it recently on the radio, and I'm like, man, it's got like, it feels like a Rage Against the Machine song or something.
Yeah, with that
like a Beastie
sort of
Boys song.
With that chugging guitar
lick. It's a Tom Morello guitar line is what it sounds like. Yeah.
Well, it's a great track.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's so good.
So Sabotage hit the top 20 on the Alternative Songs chart and was nominated for a Grammy Award. While the video was a staple on MTV, if you existed in 1994 and watched MTV, you saw this video constantly.
Yes.
It was nominated, well, it, the clip, which spoofed 70s cop shows like The Streets of San Francisco and Starsky and Hutch, it generated 5 MTV Video Music Award nominations, but I don't actually think it won any of them.
That's wild.
Yeah, well, you know, things are strange.
What do you think won Video of the Year that year?
So just look up 1994 VMAs Wiki, and then I'll trust Wiki.
We'll go down this rabbit hole.
1994. Oh, wait, I think I actually know the answer, so
okay.
You should probably guess before you get
there. Well, I'm going to just look it up. Oh, you do know the answer?
I do, because I read it earlier.
Did you just look this up?
No. I remember reading something.
What is it?
It's Aerosmith's Cryin'.
That's correct.
Which was a huge video. Great.
Yeah, one of the Alicia Silverstone ones, right?
It was the first one.
Yeah.
And then that was the first of three, because she was then in Crazy and Amazing.
Mm.
And it made Alicia Silverstone a star.
And it was up against Everybody Hurts by REM, another
classic
video, and Nirvana's Heart-Shaped Box.
Those were the four nominees for Video of the Year.
Yep.
I mean, really, it's just any one of them would be great.
Yeah, for sure. Honestly might give it to REM. But I love that Sabotage video.
That REM video, man.
And you're correct that it won none of the... five nominations.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it was up for something called Viewer's Choice, which must have been voted.
Aerosmith's
Cryin' won that as well.
Weird. Viewer's Choice 1994, Aerosmith beats out Beastie Boys.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy times 25 years ago. All right, so there you have it. 25 years ago this week, Beastie Boys' Ill Communication debuted at number one on the Billboard 200 chart. Okay, any parting words?
I mean, I didn't even talk about the fact that I was paparazziing Chrissy Teigen and Baby Luna at John Legend's concert at the Hollywood Bowl on Saturday.
Did you go say hi to Chrissy and Luna?
No, people did, though. People really swarmed her box, actually.
Really? Oh, that's so inappropriate.
She was sitting in one of the, stage side boxes, and I read an article, LA Times had an article that said that Baby Miles was there, who's, one, and I did not see a baby. I don't know. I'm not calling the LA Times liars, but I did not see this child. Maybe they had him backstage with a nanny or something.
Yeah.
But Luna was out at the concert dancing to all the songs, went up on stage with her dad in his arms and danced around to Green Light. It was real cute.
Wow.
Yeah. It was very fun.
But the show itself was great, too.
Oh, it was amazing. Yeah. I love going to the bowl. It was half an orchestra, Hollywood Bowl orchestra show, and then John Legend played his entire set with the orchestra.
Oh, so it was kind of a longer show than
normal. Yeah, the orchestra did 45 minutes, and then there was an intermission, and then John Legend came out and did 18 songs and an encore with the orchestra after that.
It's a full hour and a half, 2 hour show.
Yeah, it was sweet.
God, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, those listening, if you ever get a chance to come to Los Angeles and you're here and you're oh, what should we do?
Got to go to the bowl.
Try to go to the Hollywood Bowl and see a show, even if it's just a Tuesday night and it's jazz night or a classical night on Thursday or something.
Yep.
It's an amazing experience outdoors. It's a beautiful amphitheater. It's historic and iconic. You've seen it in movies. It's just beautiful.
Yep. It's a perfect night.
Okay, so what song should we go out on?
Oh,
a John Legend song?
Yeah, sure. I love John Legend, obviously. Let's go out on Green Light. I love that song.
All right, see you guys next time.
Bye. I just need permission, so give me the green light.